Chapter 15. With each passing day, Dorothy Kilgallen's inquisitive mind considered the witness testimony with close scrutiny. Her ever-thickening file contained specific notes regarding facts that did not point toward Ruby having simply decided to assassinate Oswald on his own. After Detective R.M. Sims took the witness stand, she was even more certain of this conclusion. Transcript of actual court record. Prosecution witness R.M. Sims, Detective, Dallas Police Department. Directing your attention to Friday evening, November 22, 1963, I'll ask you if you were on duty in the Homicide and Robbery Bureau, taking the telephone calls for the Bureau. I wasn't necessarily taking the telephone calls, but I was up there, and I did answer the phone some, yes, sir. Directing your attention to some time around 10 o'clock in the evening of that date, I'll ask you if you received a telephone call from a man who identified himself as Jack Ruby.
I did, yes, sir.
And what, if anything, did he tell you when he called the Homicide and Robbery Bureau?
He said he had a sack of sandwiches made up and wanted to bring them up there to the office to us.
Did you let him into the Homicide and Robbery Bureau or tell him that he could come in?
No, sir.
Now, where was Lee Harvey Oswald at that time?
He was in, I believe, either in Captain Fritz's office or another office we have there.
But they would. Now, those two offices you have mentioned are in the Homicide and Robbery Bureau?
Yes, sir. Room 317. End of transcript.
As Kilgallen weighed the credibility of each witness called to testify, she could easily examine the demeanor of the witness, their facial expressions, whether they spoke in a loud or soft voice, everything about them. Unlike others in the future, authors and so-called JFK assassination experts, the savvy reporter was right there, sitting front row, taking in the courtroom landscape. A veteran trial reporter who had covered many high-profile cases, she also could assess the witness's propensity for truth-telling, their veracity, and it appears logical that she would have noted her personal thoughts along with the pertinent testimony in the file she carried to court each day. In this excerpt, Detective Sims supplied additional evidence that Jack Ruby was indeed gathering as much information about Oswald as possible. It seems likely Kilgallen must have been struck by the detective explaining that while he was present in the Homicide and Robbery Bureau on Friday night after JFK had been assassinated, where Oswald was located at the time, Ruby had a sack of sandwiches made up and he wanted to bring them up there to the office to us. It's not a stretch to believe the respected journalist with the curious nature must have wondered whether Ruby had murder on his mind, whether he hoped to gain entrance to the Bureau so as to assassinate the man he was certain had killed JFK. Apparently, based on previous testimony, Ruby had had the chance to shoot Oswald when he was close to him, but for some reason that did not work out. Now, Ruby was looking for a new opportunity, but Detective Sims denied him entrance to the Bureau and thus to Oswald.
Transcript from the actual court records. Jack enjoyed his friendship with the various police officers here in Dallas, did he not?
I believe so, yes, sir.
And he had an entree there at the police station, so to speak, because he knew so many of you men.
Yes, sir.
End of transcript.
When Detective Sims admitted Ruby enjoyed his friendship with police officers here in Dallas, and knew so many of you men, Kilgallen would have jotted down this evidence from the get-go. Yet the DA's office denied Ruby had any such friendships with Dallas police officers. Later, Earl Ruby, Jack's brother, told reporters he accompanied Jack into police headquarters, where he witnessed many police officers say, "Hi, Jack! Hi, Jack! Hi, Jack!" In 2017, as part of the government's release of JFK assassination files, a memo dated November 26, 1963, surfaced,
regarding Ruby's relations with Dallas police officers. Minor gambler. Informant learned through Jack Hardy Jr., the latter presently being a fugitive, that Ruby had a good in with the Dallas Police Department, which would be borne out from his observation that Ruby had a B-girl operation where drinks were pushed heavily with no interference from the police department. AQ-195-PC had a brief conversation with Ruby. Note that the memo states Ruby had a good in with the Dallas Police Department, confirming his friendship with officers. This appears to have been common knowledge in Dallas, with many officers flocking to Ruby's Carousel Club on a regular basis.
Transcript from the actual court records. Prosecution witness, Lieutenant T.B. Leonard, Dallas Police Department.
Directing your attention to Friday night, November 22, 1963, after 11 o'clock in the evening, did you have occasion to be out in the hall leading to the Burglary and Theft Bureau?
Yes, sir.
Now, on that Friday night, November 22, 1963, I'll ask you if you had occasion to see Jack Ruby at the City Hall.
Yes, sir.
And where was it that you first saw him?
I first saw Jack Ruby in the police assembly room in the basement of the City Hall.
And about what time of night was that?
It was around 11:30. It was after 11.
And what was he doing there, or what did you see him do?
Henry Wade, the district attorney, was having a press conference in the police assembly room, and it was very crowded with newspaper reporters, and there was quite a few people down there. I went down to listen to the press conference, and they asked me and some other officers to stand by and help secure the appearance of Lee Harvey Oswald when they brought him down for the press to see him and talk to him.
All right. Now, where was Jack Ruby when you saw him first?
Jack Ruby was standing about 20 or 25 feet back on a desk in the police assembly room, against the wall on the right side of the room. He had a notebook and a pencil in his hand.
Lieutenant Leonard's testimony was more evidence pointing to Ruby being on the trail of Oswald. However, Kilgallen must have wondered how Ruby was able to be present at the press conference, since he was not a member of the press corps, and certainly did not have police credentials. This would have made her wonder who let Ruby into the hall leading to the bureau, while causing her to conclude that Ruby was dedicated to getting as close to Oswald as possible. Also of interest to Kilgallen was Lieutenant Leonard's admission that Ruby was on a desk in the police assembly room, and that he had a notebook and a pencil in his hand. Common sense had to have indicated to Kilgallen that Ruby's ruse to gain entrance to the assembly room close to the bureau was to play a news reporter so he would blend in with the other journalists. All of this testimony added to the portrait Kilgallen was painting of Ruby, a clever man who had a plan to somehow, someway, slay Lee Harvey Oswald.
Transcript from the original court record. Prosecution witness, Wes Wise, newsman, KRLD Radio.
Directing your attention back to Saturday, November 23rd, 1963, were you working in your capacity as a newsman for KRLD?
I was.
And directing your attention to about 3 o'clock that afternoon, did you have occasion to be across the street from the school park depository, down here on Houston Street?
I did.
And what, if anything, were you doing there?
I was on assignment to retrace as close as possible the steps of Lee Harvey Oswald after he allegedly shot the president.
And did you see Jack Ruby there that afternoon?
I did.
And where was he when you first saw him?
I tried to gain entrance to the building and failed to do so. So, went back to my unit, called in to the station there, and I didn't particularly want anybody to hear the transmission.
I had rolled up the window on the driver's side, and after I, or right near the end of the transmission, somebody, as I recall, knocked on the window and I put it down, and it was Jack, and he reintroduced himself to me.
Did you have a conversation with him then?
I did.
And what was the nature of your conversation?
Well, it's hard to recall the details, but we discussed the killing of the president, general conversation about how terrible it was. I mentioned that I had been at the trademark the day before when he was due, when the president was due to arrive. And we discussed the reactions of the terrible reaction there to the president's killing. Did you see what direction Jack Ruby came from?
He came from the general direction of the railroad tracks, which is north, I believe.
That would be north of the school book depository?
Yes.
Let me ask you if he mentioned that Captain Fritz and Chief Curry were in the near vicinity at that time.
As I recall it, we held a conversation, oh, maybe 8, 9, 10 minutes there. Then I believe I got ready to leave, and he came back. As I remember it, he came back to the car and said, "Did you know that Will Fritz and Jesse Curry were here?" And I said, "No, where are they?" And he said, "Well, they're over there looking at the flowers, which had been placed there by people in Dallas." And I think hinted that I might want to take pictures, which I did.
Wes Wise's testimony alerted Kilgallen to the fact that Jack Ruby was continuing to gather information about JFK's death and Oswald on the Saturday afternoon before Ruby shot Oswald. Obviously, she would have concluded that Ruby had more than a passing interest in every aspect of the Oswald matter, even to the point of having either followed or come upon Detective Will Fritz and Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry. Why, she must have asked herself, was Ruby so intent on learning more and more about what was transpiring on the police end, and through Wise, a reporter?
Transcript from the original court record. Prosecution witness, D.V. Harkness, Dallas Police Department, Traffic Division.
Directing your attention to around 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, on that Saturday, November 23, 1963, I'll ask you if you were assigned to the vicinity of the entrance of the county jail to assist in traffic and handling people.
Yes, sir, I was.
Now, I'll ask you if you were anticipating the transfer of Oswald at around 4 o'clock.
Yes, sir, we were.
Now, sometime after 3 o'clock, I'll ask you if a crowd began to block the driveway of the entrance to the county jail.
Yes, sir. A crowd had merged to the entrance and was making it difficult for the sheriff's department to operate.
All right, sir. And at that time, I'll ask you if you notified the sheriff's department that they should block that off with either men or ropes.
Yes, sir, I did.
And was that done?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Do you know the defendant in this case, Jack Ruby?
Yes, sir.
I'll ask you if you saw Jack Ruby in that crowd that you moved back from the jail entrance.
Yes, sir.
And did you see which direction he went after you moved him back?
No, sir. The last I had seen of him was at Elm and Houston, on the jail side, on the east side of Houston.
Now, that was on Saturday afternoon, just before 4 o'clock?
Yes, sir.
No doubt exists that Kilgallen paid close attention to Witness Harkness's testimony for at least two significant reasons. First, it is clear she would have realized that the entrance to the county jail was blocked either by men or ropes. Unclear is whether Ruby intended to enter the jail entrance, but if he did, then the entrance being blocked prohibited this from happening, perhaps blunting a scouting expedition to learn the logistics of the jail basement area, where he had to have known Oswald might be transferred from the next day. Second, Harkness confirms his sighting of Jack Ruby at the jail entrance and suggests the time was 2:30 or 3 o'clock on Saturday the 23rd, the day before Ruby shot Oswald. Most significant, though, is Harkness spotting Ruby on the 23rd, meaning that Ruby's later statements that he just happened to be at the jail entrance the next day before he shot Oswald fell short of the truth. With her sharp mind in full force, Kilgallen would have concluded visiting the jail entrance was now part of his plan to somehow gain entrance so he could be ready when Oswald was being transferred. Note, in a little-known publication by the Dallas Morning News on November 20th, 1988, entitled November 22nd, 25 Years Later, secured by this author, page 31 features a statement by Dallas police officer Roy Vaughn. Sometime later in the morning, I learned that allegedly Ruby had told them he came down that Main Street ramp. I'll tell you right up front, I don't believe it. I think he came in another way.
Transcript from the original court record. Prosecution witness John Rutledge, Dallas Morning News.
Directing your attention back to the afternoon and evening of the 22nd of November, the day of the assassination of the president, where were you at that time?
Well, I am a night police reporter. I come to work about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But I came in early. I reported directly at the police station on the third floor, and was covering the activities inside Captain Fritz's office.
On that occasion, did you see the defendant, Jack Ruby, there on the third floor of the Dallas Police Department?
Yes. I saw him right outside of Captain Fritz's office in the hall.
Now, let's go back. Were there police guards at the elevator as you came in to check all who were coming in?
Yes.
Now, go ahead and tell us how you saw, if you did see Jack Ruby, the defendant, get by the guards there.
Well, I saw Jack and two out-of-state reporters, whom I did not know, leave the elevator door and proceed toward those television cameras, to go around the corner where Captain Fritz's office was. Jack walked between them. These two out-of-state reporters had big press cards pinned on their coats, great big red ones. I think they said, President Kennedy's visit to Dallas, press, or something like that.
And Jack didn't have one, but the men on either side of him did.
And they walked pretty rapidly from the elevator area past the policeman. And Jack was bent over like this, writing on a piece of paper and talking to one of the reporters and pointing to something on the piece of paper. He was kind of hunched over.
Rutledge's testimony must have added to Kilgallen's realization as a journalist herself that Jack Ruby was continuing to set himself up as reporter so he could gain access to police headquarters, the jail basement entrance, or wherever, when the time was right. Like the other witnesses who had testified for the prosecution, Rutledge, a reporter and not a detective, had no reason to lie, but instead was a credible witness, who had seen Ruby and observed Jack was bent over like this, writing on a piece of paper, and talking to one of the reporters, and pointing to something on the piece of paper he was kind of hunched over. Visualizing this happening, Kilgallen was smart enough to know Ruby was play-acting, cozying up to out-of-state reporters, and that by being hunched over, he was attempting to avoid the look of police officers or investigators who knew he wasn't a reporter.
The following is a transcript from the court record.
Now, directing your attention to Captain Fritz's and the homicide office, that opens into the corridor there, did you see while you were there Lee Harvey Oswald being brought in or out of the homicide more than once or any time?
Yes, sir. Several times they brought him out from homicide.
Is that where they were interrogating him, in homicide, as far as you know?
Yes, sir. That's where he was being interrogated.
One time the district attorney, Mr. Wade, came out and then went back in, and they asked who that was, if that was Captain Fritz. And Jack explained to all of them and told them that it wasn't Captain Fritz, that it was Henry Wade, that he was the district attorney. He was just generally furnishing all the out-of-state press, who everybody was that was there?
Yes, sir. He was very good making identification to the strangers.
Now let me ask you, did any officer or somebody from over toward across the hall ask Jack Ruby anything with reference to what he was doing there?
Yes, sir. I heard two, possibly three, detectives speak to him. One of them, I remember, was standing near the Burglary and Theft Bureau door.
Was he asked any questions by anyone that you heard?
One of these detectives knew him and yelled. He had to yell almost at the top of his voice in the hallway to be heard. In fact, all this I have testified to previously about the things Jack told the visiting reporters, that was shouted at the top of his lungs. Everybody had to shout to be heard by the man right next to him, and they were all crammed together pretty tight. This detective hollered over in the crowd and said words something like, "Hey, Jack, what are you doing here?" What did Jack Ruby say, if anything? He got his arm out of that mass of people and waved his hand at this detective and said,
"Hello there." And he called him by his first name, and he said, "I'm helping all these fellas." And he turned around and he pointed. According to this testimony, Ruby continued to play a reporter while providing valuable information to the ones who didn't know who Henry Wade was, continuing to blend in within proximity to where Oswald was being interrogated was working, Kilgallen realized. But then one of the detectives almost blew Ruby's cover story when he wisely asked Ruby, "Hey, Jack, what are you doing here?" Only quick thinking on Ruby's part, first by calling the detective by name and then shouting, "I am helping all these fellows," saved the day. Fortunately for Ruby, the detective moved on, and Ruby continued to help the other reporters while using them as cover, since he had no business being in police headquarters in the first place.
Transcript from the court record. Now that was 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening.
And now, later on that night, did you see him anywhere?
Later on that night, I saw him. It was after I saw him come past the police guard from the public elevator down in the corridor. And then I saw him again about midnight in the basement in the assembly room.
Was that on Friday night, the 22nd of November?
Yes, sir.
1963?
Yes, it was.
Was that the conference where they brought Oswald in there in front of the press?
Yes, sir, it was.
Where was Ruby, the best of your recollection at the time?
At the time that Oswald was interviewed by the press?
Yes.
Well, I didn't see him while Oswald was there. My attention was focused on Oswald, and Oswald was all I could see.
Well, Oswald was there a couple of minutes, or three. Did you see at that time Jack Ruby in the audience anywhere?
Yes, sir. He was just about directly in front of you, about as far from you as you and I are now, I believe. There were two little tables in this assembly room, and you were on the platform, and he was behind the second table.
During that conference there, was the question asked something about some Cuban movement, with reference to Oswald? Did someone ask me about that?
Some reporter asked you if Oswald was linked with being a member of the Cuban movement in this country.
I believe I answered something about the Free Cuba movement or something to that effect, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Now, at that time, did the defendant, Jack Ruby, say anything from out in the audience? Did he volunteer any information?
That's the time he answered the question before you could answer it.
And he gave the name of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, I believe. If what Kilgallen had watched and heard thus far during the Ruby trial wasn't enough to convince her that there was much more to Ruby's story than was being told, this testimony had to have raised a red flag for one simple reason. All along, Ruby would swear he never knew Oswald, yet the strip club owner knew enough about him to correct the answer regarding whether Oswald was a member of the Cuban movement in this country, about the Free Cuba movement, to Fair Play for Cuba Committee. Learning of what Ruby had said must have made her eyes flash and caused the revered reporter to scribble a plethora of notes on the paper inside her ever-thickening file. It may very well be that this is when Kilgallen realized that Oswald and Ruby were indeed connected, linked together prior to the assassinations, with the connection continuing through the assassinations themselves.
Transcript from the court record.
I don't recall that I was even looking at the detectives.
I seem to remember somebody muttering, "That fellow Ruby," only he didn't use those words, "ought not to be up here."
That fellow Ruby ought not to be up here. You didn't think he should either, did you?
No, sir, I didn't. Sure didn't. Now, that was up to them. I had never seen Jack Ruby, but I had heard about him for a long time. I was surprised he was up there.
Once again, Kilgallen had to realize Ruby's plan was almost eliminated by someone who believed that fellow Ruby ought not to be up here. And the reporter Rutledge mentioned certainly agreed, according to Rutledge's testimony. Whether Kilgallen followed up with questions for Rutledge, or any of the other witnesses, away from the courtroom is unknown. But it makes common sense that she would have done so, thus confirming what these witnesses saw and heard, and deciding on her own their credibility.
Transcript from the court records.
This man that he had never seen before, being introduced as Mr. Wade, did he say anything to him when he came in? When Mr. Wade came in? Did Mr. Ruby say anything to him?
Well, I was going to holler at Mr. Wade and ask him this one little question, but Ruby was closer to him.
What did Jack say?
Ruby said, he first said on the phone, he said, "Here comes Henry Wade now." And he turned around and said, "Henry, Henry, come over here."
Would you repeat that? I didn't hear you. What did he say? "Here come Mr. Wade now"?
He was talking on the telephone to somebody on the phone. I don't know who. And he said, "Here comes Mr. Wade now." And then he held the telephone up and said, "Henry, Henry, come over here," and pointed at the telephone.
"Aren't you mistaken? Didn't he say Mr. Wade?"
"No, I think he said Henry, Henry."
Kilgallen must have shaken her head in disbelief of this testimony, that Jack Ruby was actually calling Henry Wade Henry, as if they were close friends. Why Ruby felt he could do this, and without apparent objection from Wade, boggles the mind, leading to important questions about Wade's relationship with Ruby, to the point where he could let the strip club owner set up telephone interviews for him. Without doubt, Kilgallen's instincts that she needed to continue her investigation toward learning the truth about who killed JFK and why Ruby shot Oswald, were in full force. Too many unanswered questions existed. She knew. Way too many.